Technorama episode 564, Stardust in the Wind. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This is Technorama. This is the fun part of the week where Craig Stepp and I get together and talk about whatever we can find that ends up on it. No other podcast, I'm pretty sure. No other podcast carry some of the news that we have, and they certainly don't do the discussion. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always... Oh, if you're a returning listener, welcome back. Thank you very much. Didn't want to skip over that part.
Yeah,
had welcome. To hurry up and get to the show content. There's a lot of good stuff in here today. Craig Stepp is joining me from South Carolina. Hi.
Hey there. How you doing?
Not many more days you'll be in sunny Phoenix, Arizona.
Just three more sleeps.
The East and West Coast Binary Studios will become one.
Wonder Twin powers activate.
Uh-huh. So will you become a non-binary studio?
Singular.
You're very singular. Progressive, Brian.
I am. This is a safe space.
Joining us from all the way across the...
Yard?
50 feet, 40 feet away? I don't even know.
We have our tarps set up on the back 40 of the Tomasi estate.
Living from the cardboard box next to my gazebo is Brian Brown. How are you, Brian?
Hey, do you got any soap I can borrow?
Yes.
I need to take a shower with your hose.
Oh, the hose!
What are you starting a sanctuary city there, Chuck?
I'm an illegal immigrant.
The good news is progress is being made on his house.
It is.
The contractor has been
doing the demo work.
Set to work.
Yep, doing the work.
Let's update that. So you've been there what, 6 months now?
Ten. Well, we've been out of the house.
It's coming up
10.
On eight.
Eight here.
Yeah.
Eight.
Really?
Yeah. We spent almost 2 months in a hotel. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
wow.
They moved in September 11th to the guest house. Mm. I was telling Donna just this morning, I said, it feels longer than that.
No.
I don't know. It's not I'm not saying that in a negative way. It just feels like a lot longer than that.
It was kind of like when I'm talking to Scott Tyler yesterday in our D&D conversation, I'm like, hey, my landlord is texting me. And one of my friends goes, yeah, he wants the rent money. I went, they're already paid. The insurance takes care of those common things.
Of that. We get a check.
I don't
every
worry
month.
About those things.
I'm going to miss those
Brian's
checks.
Brian's people take care of that.
Yeah. I might have to cut back on our internet when you leave.
I don't know how fast things are going to go, but I imagine gangbusters because these guys are really motivated to get it done. And, you know, they take one project at a time, basically, and boom, through the end. So,
well, an insurance company didn't want this lingering that long, I guess.
No, they don't actually, because after June, then they have to get my adjuster has to get his manager's approval.
That sounds like buying a car.
Yeah,
I'm about to talk to my manager now.
Yeah, so we'll see.
Right.
Yeah, well, it's been very enjoyable to say the least. So we definitely are going to have a cleaning service come in though after us because there's dust. We don't dust. I mean, it's just pretty much a common fact. It's like never really been a big duster.
And cat.
So we figured that, you know, when we leave, we'll make sure to have a cleaning service come in and de-louse. I mean, clean the place completely. So,
hey, the other way we're cleaning this place is like burn it.
Wouldn't be the first pests that have been in that guest house.
Yeah, I can imagine you've had some interesting ones during your time of being a Airbnb.
Hey, I left it clean.
Craig, he won't be out in time for you to get here Wednesday, though.
Sorry, buddy. You're going to have to...
Well, wait a minute. There's two bedrooms in there.
One's an office.
You can go ahead and sit in there with my computer and the cat.
Leave all the alerts on your browser. All night. Bing! Bing! Ding!
What is this noise? Actually, the keyboard itself would, because it's a lit keyboard and has all the fun stuff.
It's oscillating. Just, whoa,
yeah, I guess it does. I can make it home.
No, I can see it now. Brian's going to wake up and say, what is that? Aren't pillows.
Those aren't pillows. Little plane strains.
All right. Let's do the history thing. We need to roll.
Oh,
let's that's
grab
true.
The bag o' die. I'll take the ugly colored one.
Okay.
And
take my lucky die.
Oh man. Well, it's a good number for Donna and me, and she knows what that number is.
Oh crap.
You're not going to ask your Google Home to do it for you this time, Craig?
No, I got the dice. They were in my, I was trying to find the pocket.
He puts them in his backpack, but he never seems to use them.
What? I use them all the time.
On the road? Do you use them? Do you take your dice with you and use them somewhere other than your home?
Because my boss may be listening to this? No.
So why do you keep putting them in your backpack?
For good luck. They're good luck dice. They're,
the dice are probably hate 80, you.
What, 4? 80
Just roll.
Something?
Just roll.
Well, maybe I should go look for some new good luck dice.
Well, maybe you should take them out every now and then and use them.
Dust
and maybe,
them off.
Yeah, maybe.
Air them out.
What'd you get, Craig?
6.
I got
stupid dice.
You got what?
I got a 6 as well.
I got an 8? I won with an 8?
You won. Congratulations.
Oh, we got a dice. We got a roll off.
Yeah, you and Craig need to figure out who's last.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
High teens.
15.
Ah, all right.
Okay.
All right. So screw these dice.
What'd you get?
It's obviously Chuck, Brian, Craig.
Yes.
Let's begin with the history. This is one of my favorite parts of the whole show, to be honest. On this day in history for May 1st, 2019, there are this is the 121st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 244 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date in 1328, by the Treaty of Edinburgh, Northampton, the Kingdom of England recognizes the Kingdom of Scotland as an independent state.
I seen it wrong. It was also in this date in 1707 that the Act of Union joining the Kingdom of England and the Kingdom of Scotland to form the Kingdom of Great Britain takes effect.
Coincidence?
No.
It was only like 400 years later.
Later.
Yeah. So May 1st, 1753, publication of Species Plantarum by Linnaeus and a formal start date of plant taxonomy adopted by the International Code of Botanical Nomenclature.
I honestly thought that was going to come out of Species Planetarium, but that's how I read it the first time. I went, oh, botanical, yes.
By Linus.
I was looking at the planetarium, too.
This is you, Chuck.
Establishment of the Illuminati in Ingolstadt, which is Upper Bavaria, by Jesuit-taught Adam Weishaupt on this date in 1776.
It was 179 years ago today that the penny black, the first official adhesive postage stamp, is issued in the United Kingdom again.
179 years ago.
Yep.
The very first adhesive stamp.
Adhesive stamp.
How did they... They didn't have scotch tape back then.
Glue.
Yep. Okay. A lot of horses died.
Yep.
You know where you can stick that.
Also, now you don't even have to lick them.
Yeah.
Also today, in 1851, Queen Victoria opens the Great Exhibition at the Crystal Palace in London.
135 years ago today, Moses Fleetwood Walker becomes the first black person to play a professional baseball game in the United States, and everybody thought it was Jackie Robinson.
No. Proclamation of the demand for an 8-hour workday in the United States is on this date in 1884.
Oh, I want to make a proclamation for an 8-hour workday.
Yeah, good luck there.
Can we get back to that, please?
Yeah, tell me about it. Also, today in 1885, the original Chicago Board of Trade building opens for business.
I wonder what the original building is now, if it's even still there.
Maybe.
On May 1st, 1930, the dwarf planet Pluto is officially named.
Also, May 1st, 1931, the Empire State Building is dedicated in New York City.
There's a lot of cool stuff on May 1st.
And it was also on this date in 1956 that the polio vaccine developed by Jonas Salk is made available to the public.
Continuing with the coolness, in 1960, Francis Gary Powers, wow, I jumped ahead a little bit, in a Lockheed U-2 spy plane is shot down over the Sverdlovsk Oblast. I wouldn't want to get oblasted out of the sky either. Soviet Union, of course. We all know where that is. Sparking a diplomatic crisis.
52 years ago today, Elvis Presley and Priscilla Ballou are married in Hull, Las Vegas.
How about that? Where else would they have gotten married?
Yeah, of course.
What did he say when she said yes?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That was
oh boy.
Way too easy.
I started to read this one as goofy, but Disney MGM Studios opens at Walt Disney World near Orlando, Florida, United States on this date in 1989.
I think you should have done that one as goofy.
Oh, gosh. Disney MGM Studios.
No, that's your bullwinkle.
That's a little more like bullwinkle.
Yeah.
I'm not even trying this one as SpongeBob. 20 years ago today, SpongeBob SquarePants premieres on Nickelodeon after the 1999 Kids' Choice Awards.
Ooh, another cool one. OpenOffice.org released version 1.0, the first stable version of the software on this date in 2002. Wow.
Why does it seem like it was earlier than 2002? OpenOffice only came out in 2002?
Hey, yeah.
I downloaded it that day, too. I remember trying to use it. It was rough around the edges a little bit, but it worked.
That's very cool.
It worked.
Happy birthday goes out on this date to German astronomer, astrologer, mathematician Johannes Stadius, born on this date in 1527.
A German missionary and astronomer Johann Adam Schall von Bell was born 428 years ago today.
And William Lilly, English astrologer, was born on the same date in 1602.
He was a Taurus.
Johann Jakob Balmer, the Swiss mathematician and physicist, was born 194 years ago today.
Born May 1st, 1910, American astronomer and ufologist J. Allen Hynek.
Were there actually ufologists back then?
Ufologists, really, I guess.
That's not what they called themselves back then.
No, they probably didn't. They probably went, strange things from outer space.
It sounds like that could describe my career. I'm an ufologist. Kind of oof and no, make it work.
You're a goofologist.
Oopsologist.
That's right. I lost my place. Where we were at?
Jack Parr.
Oh, where you go?
Jack Parr.
I got it. Thank you. Jack Parr, the American comedian, author, and talk show host, was born 101 years ago today.
Wow.
Wow.
Oh, I was thinking Jack Palance. Never mind. I would have read that as Jack Palance.
A little different.
A little bit different.
Yeah.
This is all you, Chuck.
Oh, we're running out of music, too. American commander, pilot, astronaut Scott Carpenter was born in the state in 1925.
Also turning 74 today is American singer-songwriter Rita Coolidge.
And also born on the same date in 1949, American motorcycle designer co-founded Orange County Choppers, Paul Tootle Sr.
All right. He's how old now?
Yeah, 1949.
150. Yeah. American singer, songwriter, guitarist, and producer Ray Parker Jr. was born on the state in 1954. Who are you going to call?
Well, no, it's because Bustin' makes him feel good.
Okay. And he flies the Millennium Falcon.
What his wife said. That's what she said.
And he fought Rocky. Why don't we just keep going with this?
That's as bad as I was laying him on the guy Kent at church today.
Oh, my.
He said, you did quite a lot of work at Easter last week. I said, no, I had the week off. I didn't do Sambo. He says, didn't you read or something? I said, no, that was Palm Sunday. I was pilot. And I got on the microphone. I said, ladies and gentlemen, this is your pilot speaking. And I said, now I have my pilot's license. He goes, to watch this 90-year-old guy groan was great.
Did you really say that?
Yes. It was before the service started. And then and then I said, hey, Kent, what do you say? You cut some firewood and then I'll pilot. It just kept. I said, it doesn't get any better than this, Kent. He took his walker and moved on.
What did we say, Chuck? A groan is as good as a laugh. Isn't that what we said, Chuck? A groan is as good as a laugh.
That's right. I'm taking Phil Plait's philosophy and saying half groan, half laugh. That's the sweet spot for an audience response.
Right.
Listener birthdays this week include May 3rd, KL Wright from Hawaii. May 3rd is also Leon, our Patreon member elite. And Joe.
We see him once a year, too.
Joe Michowski. From on the podcast, if it's still out there.
I thought my birthday was on this. It should be on this month, too.
Your birthday is not on the calendar?
Really? I put it on there a long time ago, but maybe you got lost.
And
happy
what's
birthday.
The date?
May 6th.
May 6th is where we're coming up. Amber Pace, not really a listener, but mother and wife of listeners. I love that subtitle.
That's awesome.
Bill Barber. Craig is going to put that on there right now.
Oh, there
is on the 6th. Stephen Pickle and Brian Brown.
Yeah.
Brian
the intern Brown. Yes.
Craig's editing this live as we go.
I'll have to put it on. Make sure it's on the wiki. I could have swore I put it on there, but
May 1st is the date we're releasing this podcast. And that is the anniversary of
the May Day.
Craig.
Technorama.
Oh.
It'll be our 14-year anniversary. I love talking to podcasts and go, oh, yeah, we've been podcasting for quite a while. And we're coming up on 2 years.
Hey, what I remember I was in a thread recently. I was in a thread recently on Reddit, and the guy was like, how many podcasts should you put out before looking at your numbers? And I was thinking,
numbers?
I haven't looked at my numbers in 8 years.
Exactly. It's interesting for about a year, and then you get depressed and stop looking.
I might go look at them and pass again for a while. But I was like, wow, we've been podcasting long enough for 8 years to be like the halfway point.
Well, I think it's funny because what happens is that, you know, it's that newness. Like, ooh, do I get new listeners? Do I get new listeners?
It's like when you buy a stock,
it
right?
It is.
You check it like every hour. And then you go,
refresh. Yeah.
Then after a while, you're just like, meh. If they listen, they listen. Nah. Get so
All that matters is, hey, it's like, you know, I'm easy to make myself laugh. And I get to the point where it's like, that's all that really matters is I think it's funny. You know, if everybody else thinks it's funny too, they can join in. But
yeah, it's a bonus, basically, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Right. The fact that you have listeners, yeah.
Let's do some news. We start out with, this is great news, everyone. Where's our great news?
Oh, great news, everyone.
There we are.
You get the first story, so even better.
Oh, is this me?
This is all you, man.
How did I end up with this?
You're number one. You won with an 8.
I didn't know that the history thing carried over. We have new rules evolving all the time.
Why not?
Okay.
Why not?
For thousands of years, the Babylonians invented multiplication. Last month, mathematicians perfected it. On March 18th, two researchers described the, quote, fastest method ever discovered for multiplying two very large numbers. The paper marks the culmination of a long-running search to find the most efficient procedure for performing one of the most basic operations in math. This is a quote, everybody thinks basically that the method you learn in school is the best one, but in fact, it's an active area of research, says Jorvis van der Hoven.
Haven, probably, yeah.
My Dutch is really bad. Sorry, Jorga. You can help with that. Hoeven. He'll probably send us a voice message on how to actually say that. He's a mathematician at the French National Center for Scientific Research and one of the co-authors. The complexity of many computational problems, from calculating new digits of pi to finding large prime numbers, boils down to the speed of multiplication. Van der Hoeven describes their results as setting a kind of mathematical speed limit for how fast many other kinds of problems can be solved. Quote, in physics, you can have important constants like the speed of light, which allow you to describe all kinds of phenomena, Van der Hoeven says. If you want to know how fast computers can solve certain mathematical problems, then integer multiplication pops up as some kind of basic building brick with respect to which way you can express those kinds of speeds. Most everyone learns multiplication the same way. We stack two numbers, we multiply every digit in the bottom by every digit in the top number, and then do the addition at the end. If you're multiplying two-digit numbers, you end up with performing four smaller multiplications to produce the final product. Okay, this is, if you work that to more digits, like 3 and 3, you have 9. It's a factor called n squared.
Right.
That's how long it takes to multiply. So when you get out to digits that are, say 100 digits times another 100 digits, and you need this for thinking about things like pi, which is great for security encryption keys, it would take 10,000 operations to multiply those. Now, they've come up with a way that does 2n. That is a huge difference. You won't see it when you're just doing 2x2s. This is, there's a diagram and links through the show notes. I looked at it because I was hugely skeptical, like, oh man, this doesn't look any easier. But it's not meant to be easier for you and me. It's meant to be easier for the computers.
Oh, okay.
Because they can compute things much, much faster. I don't know if this will be taught in grade school, primary school, whatever you want to call it. But after reading through this article, I went, this could save a lot of time.
Oh, it has a specific name, too. It's called the
Katsuba method.
Karatsuba?
Karatsuba?
Karatsuba, okay. Yeah. Karatsuba looks like.
I think Karatsuba. I ordered that for dinner at the restaurant.
Yeah, it's a type of sushi.
Yeah. Served very fast.
And made with carrots, apparently.
Yeah.
Wait, look, it multiplied.
It's gold, as in carrots. It's gold. It's a gold standard for multiplication.
Normal orders will take you, if you order 5 items, it will take you 25 minutes. This will only take 10.
Ooh. So the greater the volume, the more time you save.
Yes.
So eat lots.
Yes.
Okay.
With the addition in this factor, you do it earlier in school because it's much easier. You would do it at home and later. Let me get to the good part where they say, carrot soup's method is made possible by multiplying numbers using only N to the 1.58 single digit multiplications. I know that doesn't mean much to you at home, but where was the good part where I finally got the 2N? It was actually above this, but good thing I read ahead in this one because it is a fairly long article.
It's a long one.
Yeah, if you are
apparently
interested
reading
in
the article is not two times as fast.
No, it was a bit. So carrot soup's method involves breaking up the digits of a number and recombining them in a novel way that allows you to substitute a small number of additions and subtractions for a large number of multiplications. The method saves time because addition takes only 2n steps as opposed to n squared steps.
Oh, okay.
So they're adding more addition. I don't know if the actual total is 2n, but the addition is much faster, so you want more of those.
And actually, the infographic has a lot of good info on it. I was reading it there. It's like really interesting. It's like, oh, okay.
It's kind of a cool algorithm.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of reminds me of is not that it was any faster, but they were showing some kids how to do multiplication.
Or
and it
division
was like some
was
weird
the other
boxy.
One.
Yeah.
What was that? Was that what it was? There was like a big boxy looking thing they were having them do to get the answer. I'm like, it does not seem.
Yeah, we've talked about stories like this before with different methods of doing mathematical operations, but this one intrigued me because it involved saving time on computers.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It is interesting.
All right, Brian, you're next. So I guess we're carrying the order here. Let me make the font a little larger for all of us at home.
Hey, thanks, Chuck.
We're not getting any younger, especially waiting on that last article to finish.
Hey.
One of Stephen Hawking's most famous theories about dark matter, that this mysterious invisible substance is made up of primordial black holes. It recently suffered a huge blow. There's a lot of news articles about this. That conclusion comes from a massive telescope that captured an image of an entire galaxy in one shot. Now, the findings don't completely rule out Hawking's famous notion, but they suggest that primordial black holes would have to be truly tiny to explain dark matter. So dark matter, for those who don't know, is a name given by physicists to explain a particularly mysterious phenomenon. Everything in the universe moves, orbits, rotates as there are more mass than we can detect. Explanations for dark matter range from ghostly particles called neutrinos to unknown particles to new laws of physics. In the 1970s, Hawking and his colleagues theorized that the Big Bang may have created a large number of relatively small black holes, each about the size of a proton.
Wow.
These tiny ancient black holes would have been difficult to see, yet would exert a large gravitational pull on other objects. Two known properties of dark matter.
I didn't know this was one of his theories. It was a gazillion little black holes.
Yeah, everywhere, basically.
Okay.
Until now, the theory can only be tested for primordial black holes heavier than the moon. So they got to be heavier than the moon. But as technology has improved, scientists have been able to take sharper and sharper pictures of the outer space. The Hyper Subprime Cam, the HSC digital camera.
It doesn't spell a word. It's not an acronym. It's only an initialization. I'm disappointed.
Sorry.
These guys didn't get to work.
It's basically
they cut out the middleman and just went with the acronym.
Yeah. It's a digital camera on the Subaru telescope in Hawaii. Subaru makes telescopes? Holy crap. Is there anything they can't make?
I thought Hitachi made everything.
Cars?
Yeah.
can't make cars.
Ouch.
Careful.
Man, those Subaru people are going to come lynch you.
Hey, I'm
man.
Sorry. I don't remember them being a sponsor.
But basically, this camera could take a picture of the entire Andromeda galaxy, which it did, in one shot.
That is a beautiful picture.
Yeah. Masahiro Takada and his team at the Cavell Institute for Physics and Mathematics of the Cavalli Institute for the Physics and Mathematics of the Universe in Japan uses camera to search for primordial black holes. The result was published early this month in the Journal of Nature Astronomy. Basically, they say, hey, there's a bunch of different black holes, but it's not quite like we thought it was.
Oh,
so,
okay.
This article is super crunchy, man. They basically took 200 pictures of the Andromeda Galaxy over 7 hours on a clear night. They found just one potential micro-lensing event. So if primary black holes made up a bunch of this dark matter,
yeah,
they would have saw a lot more.
Yep.
But they didn't. So, and they basically say microlensing, which is this what they detected, is a gold standard for detecting black holes or ruling them out. And that's from Simeon Bird, a black hole physicist of the University of California, Riverside, who is not involved in this work.
And so, those playing along at home, microlensing is when you have something of significant gravity that can actually bend the light around it.
Right. Mm-hmm. So it basically says this work rules out primordial black holes as dark matter in a range of masses where the previous constraints were not as strong nor as robust as this new one. It's a very nice result, basically. Mm. So, but they say maybe this isn't a dead theory. It's just that the certain ranges that they're looking for have been ruled out. So maybe that they're different masses than
somewhere
they thought.
Else?
Well, no, they thought they're different masses than what they thought there were. So,
and poor Steven isn't here to defend himself.
Well, I was thinking, you know, correct. If you think about time, space travel, like we've seen in a movie, you know, in movies, imagine trying to navigate around these little tiny black holes.
Yeah.
I can imagine that would be slightly problematic.
Yeah, if there's a lot of them out there, yeah, you're faster than light drive.
Not so much.
Yeah. Oh, we landed that one right in the garage again. What is Han saying before he jumps to light speed?
Never tell me the odds. No.
No, listen, kid. flying through
hyperspace.
Shut up, sit down.
Without the proper calculations, you find yourself flying.
I remember him saying, "Mama." I remember him saying, "Put your seatbelts on. It's safety first."
No, I think that was Chewie that actually said that. You just couldn't understand him.
That's what he was saying. Give him the safety spiel. And nobody listened to him.
And they're like, what the hell's a Wookiee saying? I don't understand him.
One of my teammates at work has a dog named Chewie, and he's always barking on the other end of the conference calls. You know, because you're on the conference calls, you have to have a barking dog. It's kind of obligatory.
Yeah.
And she cracked up. She cracks up every time I say, Chewie, quiet.
Yeah, you have to have the barking dog, slamming doors, or lawn work, usually. A blower.
Exactly. The leaf blower thing, yeah.
I'm sorry, my lawn guys are over. Mute yourself, dummy.
Or the airport. Somebody's at the airport.
All right, Craig, this is all you, buddy.
All right. Space news. Speaking of breaking down the theories, Hubble hints today's universe expands faster than it did in the past. So for a while now, are they confirming this, or
because this has been a suspected theory that the universe is expanding and increasing in speed.
Well, it says Hubble hints. I don't know if they confirmed anything.
Okay.
As the universe is currently expanding 9% faster than the early universe, which is forcing astronomers to reconsider some fundamental aspects of the cosmos. So for a while now, astronomers have been confronting a conundrum. I hate it when that happens. Studies of the early universe, looking at an era after the Big Bang, tells us that the cosmos should be expanding at one speed. But when astronomers actually measure today's universe, they find a faster rate of expansion.
Interesting.
The scientists have known that the universe is expanding for around a century.
Right.
Astronomers like Edwin Hubble first noticed that every distant galaxy they would measure seemed to be moving away from Earth, and further they were, the faster they receded.
Redshift.
Yeah. In more recent years, astronomers have measured the expansion rate of today's universe using the Hubble telescope, and mysteriously, the number it found for our current expansion was 9% off the expansion rate of the early universe.
That's a pretty big factor to be off.
That is.
I would think so, in a short amount of time. We're talking about from Edwin Hubble's time to using the Hubble.
The universe is upgrading itself. It's getting faster bandwidth.
Yeah.
It's shifting gears into higher gears.
I have a theory.
Dark energy got an upgrade.
Yeah. Instead of little black holes, it's big black holes.
So the Hubble constant, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. The Hubble constant is a measure of how fast a galaxy is moving compared to how far away it is, and measuring the speed of a star galaxy is surprisingly straightforward. The light from the cosmic object moving away from Earth is shifted towards lower frequency, redder colors, just like how an ambulance siren goes off in a lower pitch as it's driving away. I guess the Doppler effect. That's turning off your 45.
You know how I remembered redshift versus blue shift?
No.
Tail lights. If a car is moving away from you, you see red lights. That's redshift.
Okay.
I know it's a cheesy analogy, but hey,
it works.
You got to remember.
Yeah, it works. So the bigger the shift, the faster the object is moving, but actually measuring the distance to a star or galaxy can be quite tricky. Scientists are using Hubble to measure cosmic expansion, are following traditional tradition set down by pioneers in this field.
I still want to change my faucets, though, to make the red one the cooler one. Because the red stars are cooler than blue stars
are.
I can hear Donna now.
Chuck, doesn't this water ever get cold?
Yeah.
What are you turning on? The blue? Yeah. No. Blue stars are hotter. Turn the red one.
Anyway, go check out the article. I'm not going to explain.
Super crunchy article. You got some super crunchy articles this week.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Good space stuff. Craig, Elton wants you to show the rest of your shirt so the rest of them can know what it says.
It says disco.
Yeah, that's it. It's a Discovery.
Star Trek Discovery. It's got the signal on the side.
Just had to break in with that late breaking chat room news.
Yeah.
And
what are you wearing, Brian?
John Miller Jr. says, don't make me turn this ship around, Luke.
Yeah, that's right.
What does mine say?
Yeah, what is your, you got
Lambda,
a Star Trek
Lambda,
shirt?
Lambda, baby.
Oh, I just saw the star at the top. I was like, it's another.
Lambda. I love that shirt.
And Chuck's wearing the shirt that our friend Richard Green gave us.
Yes, I'm wearing the Geek Out with Mainframe shirt.
I had to retire mine. I wore it too much, and it didn't fit me anymore.
I think I've had this for about 10 years.
Yeah. Oh, I wore mine a lot. Sorry. I had to let it go.
Oh, man. I still have my original Technorama shirt from 2005. Doesn't come out often, though.
You know what? We should make some new ones.
Yes, we should.
And for both
14th anniversary.
Well, we had talked about bowling shirts, too, to follow in Ben and Keith's footsteps.
That's true.
Let's take a quick break while we ponder that thought.
Action items? Let's see.
Golf shirt? Add to Todoist. We'll be right back. There was a story about a security robot that went rogue and fell into a pond.
The suicide robot. I read about this. It was horrible. I cried.
I thought it was Marvin.
I'm a sophisticated security robot, and they have me sweeping up the mall.
I know Kung Fu.
Goodbye, cruel world.
Well, the depressed robot.
The gift to the Marvin Foundation.
This is the best I can be. Billions of dollars of research and I'm a security officer.
Brain is the size of a planet.
But what really happened on that tragic day, investigators want to know.
It's a big gust of wind.
A drop in barometric pressure has caused Steve to run into the fountain. He rolled a one.
He rolled...
This is Steve Wozniak. You're listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Have you ordered the shirts yet?
Curling shirts. Curling
a whole box.
Curling shirts.
Yes.
Curling shirts.
Come on. You don't want to follow Ben and Keith. You want to, you know, forge your own ground.
New trend.
Yeah. New trend.
New trend. You do hockey jerseys, I guess.
Mouse cozies.
Mouse cozies.
I have a track pad. How's that work?
We make track pad cozies as well. It just goes around the outside of it.
What? I was watching an episode of Sherlock, and she had leather gloves on, and the track pad, the track pad was working. She's like, no, I don't think that's going to work for you. Now, I have like some knit gloves that have the little magnetic sensors, whatever.
The haptic sensors, yeah.
And those work on my phone, but I don't think just regular leather gloves do.
Yeah, maybe make haptic
shirts. Mine does.
Yeah.
Hey, yes. Have you tried turning on
haptic shirts? Just print haptic shirt on it. Exactly. And see who buys it.
Yeah.
Look, check it. My phone works with it.
It's like when CD drives came out. We had head cleaning kits for them.
Yeah, it was a little brush. It would brush off the lens. You're like, really? Yeah. Wow.
Somebody retired rich off of that.
Yeah, probably actually.
And pet rocks. Speaking of pet rocks, we've got the Hacks and Strange Stories. Is it my turn already?
It is.
Oh, yes, sir. Really it is.
Story. I love this story. The Wagon Queen Family Truckster replica sold for six figures. Someone is ready for a retro road trip. A replica of the Wagon Queen Family Truckster. I didn't even remember the Wagon Queen part. I just called it the Family Truckster.
Yeah, I didn't remember the whole name. Yeah, I didn't remember the
From
whole name
the classic
either.
Comedy Vacation was auctioned this past week for $100,100. Or in binary, that's $34 or $36. But this ugly beast could be yours. The wood paneled green machine crossed the block at the Barrett Jackson Palm Beach event. It's based on the 1981 Ford LTD rather than the 1979 Country Squire. Oh, there's an interesting factoid.
It actually was a real car.
Yeah, it was at one point. I knew it started with something. But I didn't know that.
And they modified it?
They used a different base model for the replica.
Hey, I have a feeling the original model didn't have eight headlights.
Yes. Not the original from Ford or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But it was otherwise convincing recreation that includes the Wagon Queen badging and offensive graffiti on the rear fender.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. The price paid was pretty remarkable considering the car purported to be one of the five that were built for the film received a high bid of the originals of $35,000 at a 2013 Mecum Auctions event. That car's authenticity was not confirmed, but one that was definitely used in the making of the movie is on display at the Historic Auto Attractions Museum in Roscoe, Illinois, which might make a good destination for the owner of the Barrett Jackson car. They have the license plate sort of half hanging off.
Yeah.
The thing I didn't notice, and I'd have to go back and check the movie, but there are some chevrons on the side just below the rear window that are inverted for drag. There's no purpose for these chevrons
except
to get bad mileage.
Slow you down, buddy. Or the crown. Well, I didn't quite remember the crown on the side, but maybe.
The hood ornament, the wheel wells have this crazy crown. Whoever did this had to do some serious research to get some of these details. Now, this is a custom vehicle. I mean, just I can't imagine Jesse James ever making one of these things, but. How did this never end up on Monster Machines? I used to watch this all the time. This would be a blast.
I know, right?
I love the decal on the hood. If you look at the hood, it looks like it's not quite fitting the contour quite right. It's a gap.
You know what? When we were in Cub Scouts and I did the Pinewood Derby, I did the parents race. I made the Mach 5 as a Pinewood Derby car. I did the 66 Batmobile.
You could have done this.
And I did the Mach 5. If I had to go one more year, I was either going to do the Ghostbusters Ecto-1 or this.
You know, part of the Pinewood Derby is aerodynamics, Craig. This does scream aerodynamics.
No. Craig's all about style.
No. There were people that were seriously into the speed. And I was like, you know what? I told Harrison, look, we can either go for speed or we can go for looks. And we went for looks on most of their cars. And hey, our favorite one that we built together was the Flintstones car.
Wow.
I wish I had a picture I could show you right away.
The chute at the end, the roof rips off.
Do what?
As it goes into the chute at the end, the roof rips off.
Yeah, right.
I don't know about you guys. I'm planning my next vacation in Roscoe, Illinois. That's all I have to say.
Is that where
I want to know
World
what
is?
Kind of cars they have in there.
Yeah, I'm curious. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Whoa.
They also have Wally World in there?
Maybe.
All right, we got to get this big ad off the page so we can...
Ugh. Are you a car guy, Brian?
A little bit. It's not, you know, like anything specific that I like to do. You know, I'm not like a car gearhead any stretch of imagination. I can appreciate vehicles for what they are.
Yeah, I'm not a huge car guy. I'm not going to sit there and talk about engine sizes and all that kind of stuff, but I can appreciate a good car, and
Oh yeah, I mean that's why I love the Fast and Furious movies, because they are car porn. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Amazing,
oh, yeah, yeah.
Amazing cars.
Actually, this museum looks great. I'm looking at there's the Flintstones car from the 94 movie. There's Ghostbusters. There's the Honky Lips.
Was that movie made in 94?
Which one?
The Flintstones is already 25 years old.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
With John Goodman?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Ooh, there's a bat missile from the movie Batman Returns.
And we've lost Craig.
Okay, we're going on to the next story, Craig. This one's for Brian.
They got a DeLorean. Oh, wait, Brian. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, yeah, it's me. It's all about me, Craig. Come on. So yeah. Edward Muybridge was a pioneer of both early cinema and scientific observation. His iconic clip of a galloping horse was famously used to settle a bed over where the animal lifted all four hooves from the ground while in motion. Now, more than 130 years after this breakthrough, Muybridge is the center of another, as scientists have successfully encoded this iconic film into the DNA of a living cell. The result is so-called organic GIF, or GIF, if you prefer.
I don't prefer.
And it's the first step in what...
Gandalf did not go to John Doerr.
This is English.
GIF is peanut butter. GIF is animated... Files.
Graphics image format, CompuServe.
Like I said, so the GIF in the first, I'm just going to say it from this, and I just annoy the hell out of you guys. So this is the first step in what researchers refer to as molecular recorder, able to exist, observe, and capture information within living cells. We want to turn cells into historians, explained neuroscientist Seth Shipman, a geneticist at Harvard Medical School. We envision a biological memory system that's much smaller and more versatile than today's technologies, which will track many events non-intrusively over time. Basically, we're going to record everything you experience.
In your DNA.
In your DNA.
And then harvest you when you're dead.
Pretty much. That's...
Hey, gives a whole new meaning to thumb drive.
Wow. So using the gene editing technology CRISPR, scientists funded by the National Institute of Health, NIH, set out to prove that an arbitrary sequential information, not just genetic information, could be encoded into a genome. They first did this with a single image of a human hand, and then with the help of bacteria's
thumb drive,
immune defenses. Well,
I was going to say the same thing.
Please scroll. Continue.
Past
all the ads. Holy crap!
Gosh,
I know it's ridiculous, isn't it?
So what it is? They have an image. They have an image in here, by the way. When a bacteria is attacked by a virus, its cells produce enzymes to cut and process the virus's genetic code. It does this to remember the invader, taking a portion of the virus's genetic code and adding it to his own genome, like putting heads on pikes.
That's a nice way of thinking about it.
That seems like basically this is our relic. Congratulations.
Take that, happens. Tuberculosis.
Yeah. Next time any of you guys come around here, this was going to happen to you.
Right. Stay away.
So as time passes, the bacteria's genome grows, more genetic code from viruses are added, and more heads are stacked on the pike. They're 12 high. Shipman and his colleagues hacked this process using CRISPR's system. CRISPR's CAS9 is the protein in the bacteria's immune system that cuts the virus's genetic code, while CAS1 and CAS2 are the proteins that insert the viral DNA into the genome. Excuse me. Crucially, these proteins add... these proteins add the DNA in the order it's encountered, meaning that scientists could feed the E. coli synthetic strands of the DNA specifically designed with sequential information, which then can be decoded and turned into a picture. Or a series of frames of animation. So basically, you can basically say, hey, I'm going to insert this virus in a specific way, and it's going to create a pattern. And basically, that's how they do it.
So I thought you'd have to start showing people your Google photo album. Like, would you like to see my grandson? He's right here on my shoulder.
Well, and they basically say, you know, we aren't planning on creating some cellular Netflix app, basically. They just want to say that, hey, CRISPR can do lots of really cool things, and that, you know, imagine that. Our DNA is pretty interesting stuff.
Pretty soon we'll all have a CRISPR. Actually, I got one in the fridge.
The interesting thing is that they talk about, you know, the exciting application is neurology. So you can basically take a neurologist and believe that, you know, the technology can play an important part into basically, you know, checking out the brain and memory and that sort of thing. So the medical and research pieces are interesting.
So it's not just the novelty of putting an image on DNA.
Yeah. It's just, you know, hey, look, we can do this.
You know,
you have to share that story
with Lisa. At first, when I saw this story, I thought, wow, somebody's trying to earn their grant money.
Look at all the fun stuff we could do with this. Can imagine what we could do with big business and, you know, downloading people's films.
But hey, think of the data privacy. If your pictures only exist in your own cells.
Well, just think about the technology that you could do. You could have biotechnology type stuff where you have biocomputers. You can make computations with DNA.
Ooh.
I know.
A DNA computer.
Yeah.
Crossed with a quantum computer.
Crossed with a black hole.
Let's stop right there. In other
words, Craig's mind.
Yeah.
Mind blown. No, but I'm just saying, you know, biological computers, that's a very interesting thing. It, you know, computer viruses, you know, you're actually viruses in a body.
Yeah. Where are we going with this?
I know, my mind's just thinking of all the places. We're
all over the place.
Yeah.
Save it for the Patreon show.
Speaking of Patreons, well, before we get to the Patreons, we want to mention that we do the show on Sunday nights at 9:30. However,
this next
week, we have a couple of exceptions.
Yes.
This coming Friday, we will be doing a special in-studio show because Craig and I will be on the road, and then I'm going to be on some time, long overdue time off, that we won't be back until later in May. But normally, Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern, you can find us on Facebook if you go to our Facebook page. We also want to thank our Patreon people.
Well, Chuck, yes. You know, while you're gone,
yes.
You know, Craig and I, you know, we could always do Technorama without you.
Craig's going back to South Carolina. You want to?
I would have.
You want to run this? I barely have a handle on running this.
No, we do Technorama Unplugged.
Oh, okay. And just unplugged. Record a phone call.
We record off a Discord, a phone call, basically.
So, Craig, how about Brian. Hacks and Strange Stories? Booty, 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 booty.
Exactly. It'd be like ghetto sound effects for sure.
First time I was missing from the topic is Trek. Craig and Clinton were trying to like do the sound effects through their mouth.
Yeah.
Good luck.
The console buttons being pushed instead of getting something like, let's see if I can bring this up.
Beep, 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 boop.
Yeah. Craig going beep, boop, beep. Okay. What's a transporter sound like? Never mind. Move on.
Yeah. You get kind of hooked into those sounds if you use them all the time.
Yep. Thank you to our Patreon people. You are the people who keep the show going because hosting and software upgrades and
bandwidth
take money. And rather than paying it out of our precious personal budget, you help offset that.
Not to mention the medicinal bourbon that's needed for you to deal with Craig every week.
We have some medicinal bourbon.
Why is it always on me?
Craig, oh, sorry.
Shows up.
Is it vice versa? I always forget these things.
No, he has to drink the bourbon.
Okay. Makes sense. Yeah.
Thank you to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Mega Podcastic, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, John Clifford, Birthday Boy Leon, John Noble.
Our John Noble.
Our John Noble. And we just saw him show up on Elementary.
Ah,
we'll get to
yes.
that episode. He's Sherlock Holmes' dad.
Yes.
Like,
oh, is he?
Yes.
Oh, spoiler.
Spoiler.
That's good.
Thanks.
Yeah, he's right. We're right at that episode.
It's kind of like Moriarty. Who's Moriarty in Elementary?
Oh yeah,
that's a good one too.
Okay,
great actor for that. We won't spoil that one for you, but when you see it, it's like, oh,
yep,
yeah,
Chris MC,
Alexis Duran. Sorry, I'm like, where was I?
Yeah,
Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therrien.
You were at that, John Noble.
Yes, our John Noble.
That Jorga Schrowen.
John Miller Jr. Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry. This list just goes on.
Good,
and we want to keep it going longer. Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, and Stephen Weshy. Thank you very much. If you want to be a Patreon member yourself for as little as $1 a show to help support this podcast, you can do that over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. If you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, it's right there on the screen, right there.
Well, and the interesting thing to say about the Patreon show is that, you know how we kind of get off topic in here? That show is nothing but off topic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's we start with one idea and it wanders. It could be 15 minutes.
It could be the design of it. Yeah.
Yeah. That is, it's where we hold those random thoughts that if you were here in person and the microphones weren't on, we would be having that discussion.
Yes.
That's what you're missing. So these people not only get their names enshrined on the show, they get content specifically for them. So if you want access to that URL, hey, $1 a show. What will that cost you in May? $1.
Yeah. There you go.
Right.
So thank you. did we honestly run to the end of the song? No, we still have
you still got
50 seconds, but that's okay. We're going to let that go, stop the music, and continue on with... Oh, Craig, how are you going to do this without a spoiler alert?
So I'm not going to spoil anything.
Okay, let's do the Media Corner thing then.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the Media Corner.
I did not see this. Did you put this in as a last-minute entry?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, so...
So I'm not going to ruin anything. I'm going to talk... I'm going to talk about Avengers, but Endgame. I'm not going to talk about any spoilers, other than I just thought it was a fantastic. How they brought everything together. It was a fun movie to watch. There were things in there that I saw I thought I would never see. And to be honest with you, there was a couple of times, you know, because I've been pretty... I'm huge, especially the Marvel MCU. I've been a huge fan of Marvel, huge fan of the movies. And so after 10 years building up to, you know, this, this ending to the Infinity Saga.
Yes.
There was a couple of places where, I was overwhelmed. I couldn't believe I was feeling like that. Overwhelmed.
I heard it was almost emotional.
There was a few times
somebody did give a little spoiler. I said, I cried 8 times.
Wow.
Well, there was a few times I got not because I was sad, but because I was just overwhelmed with what I was looking at. Just, you know, various geek stuff. I'm not going to say anything, but it was just like, I couldn't even say the word, what? I was trying to say, what? I was like, you know, Harrison was sitting there beside me. He was looking at me. And I was trying to look at the screen. And I was like, I can't believe what I'm seeing here. And as soon as you see the movie, you'll see what I'm talking about. But it's just like, I was so overwhelmed. I really felt like I wanted to cry. At like 12-year-old Craig was trying to come out of there. I could not believe what I was seeing.
So
it was a fun movie.
I'm doomed.
There's a few times that,
I'm doomed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're doomed.
I better bring a lot of Kleenex.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
So Craig... what sort of catheter, what sort of gauge of catheter were you wearing? Just because, well, you know, it's a 3-hour movie.
I did go a little light on the coffee in the morning.
Man. Yeah, it's a long one. That's why I'm just like, waiting. Maybe I'm like, it might be a home viewing time because you and me, Chuck, our bladders are about the size of my thumb.
Yeah.
No, you need to go to the theater. No, you got to try and pull it out.
I have the distinct advantage post-surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, when the Death Star shows up, go pee and then come back. You won't miss anything.
Wait, what?
Death no. Star. So, yeah. Anyway,
Luke comes back, you have, you know, yeah. What? Yeah. It's a long one.
Seriously. Yeah. It's a long one, but it's worth it. Actually, just like everybody else has said, the 3 hours does not feel like 3 hours.
Now,
just because the pacing is really good. There's a few times it kind of drags, but things keep moving along and it's a lot going on.
Now, can you imagine the people that actually did the entire marathon of all the Marvel movies?
Not no, but hell no.
There are people, I was reading.
That would take a week.
No, it was like 3 days, 56 some odd hours worth.
You can't stay awake something that hours, long. 31.
So yeah, it's a long time. Well, they take some breaks. I was reading about a guy who did it and about how he kind of prepped himself to do it and how he kind of did it.
What's the point?
I did it. It's kind of like the people who did sat through all the Lord of the Rings.
That's back to back a little to back. More reasonable.
I know.
I did. I don't think I didn't think it was necessary for me. Although I do revisit movies, different ones from time to time, especially over the years after, you know, Guardians came out. I know I saw it at home several times, you know, besides just the first viewing.
That's the one Marvel movie I've watched once done.
Really?
Yep. Not a big Guardian Galaxy fan. I just not. It's kind of like Iron Man 2. Saw it once, didn't really care to see it again.
Or 3.
I like 3. I like 3 a lot. Yeah. And I like
2,
the story.
Yeah, 2 was the dude with the electric whips.
Yeah. Like,
I would say that and Thor Dark World is probably low.
Dark Horse.
Yeah. Those are the my 2. They're kind of lamer. And even then.
Hulk movie or something. And then
no, I like it. I like the Edward Norton Hulk. I really do. Now, the Eric Bana Hulk.
Yeah. Hey, I'm glad you brought that up. All right. So I still have a t-shirt from when I saw the Eric Bana Hulk.
Yeah, the Ang Lee.
It just says Hulk on it.
Yeah.
And it's black. And it's held up. And I've worn it to every one of these Marvel movies over the years.
And people are like, huh?
So, no, get this. So I walk in the theater, and the guy scans my ticket off my phone and goes, wait, is that a 2003 Ang Lee Hulk shirt? I went, yes, it is. I couldn't believe that he recognized it because he certainly didn't look old enough to recognize.
That's pretty cool, though.
I was like, wow, yeah, that's pretty cool.
Look at Craig there bucking the trend.
I was like, yeah.
Fight me.
Right. Yeah.
I'm still waiting for someone to recognize the alert tone on my phone as the Babylon 5 doorbell.
Is it really?
It's really a pleasant tone.
Can you play it
real quick? Oh, can you play?
Let's see if I can find this real quick.
Well, I had the TNG tones on my phone for a long time because I always loved those
sounds
computer
and vibration
tones, ring feedback tone, tones.
Vibrating and ringing notification sounds. So,
wow, it is.
I'm stealing that.
It's actually one of the more pleasant alerts that I've ever come up with.
That is really good.
Hey, I've had so many.
And it's hard to find a clean enough one in that whole series because somebody's either talking or there's background noise. And there's a little bit of background noise.
A little bit, but that's fine.
That was towards the end of the series. I think he was sleeping and someone came to the door. I went, good enough.
Yep.
I don't know about you guys, but I've had tones on my phone. I've got a couple right now, like Slack and my text message. My text message tone. It has gotten, I've been so busy the last 3 weeks. Now, every time I hear it, I go.
Yes.
Discord is that way too.
Without even looking at the phone, I'm like,
I often just mute or turn off notifications on my computer for long periods of time.
I turn off my phone too. Like
and then I'll look at it like email, you know, oh yeah, somebody, because especially the people who write 4-word sentences and 8 of them in succession.
Like, all right, I'm saying I'm sorry, Chuck.
I brought that up at work on our work Facebook page.
Yeah.
I said, is it just me or does anybody else go crazy when you get these short little conversations? Hi, Chuck. Just wanted to check if, and it's like 6 or 7 of these. Can't you write 140 characters anymore?
No.
Or more. Twitter lets you do that.
I know. You can't even get up to the Twitter minimum at this point. And all you get is.
Yeah.
It's just over and over. It's like, just mute the thing. I know who it is when I hear that. I go, I'll wait till 6 or 7 of those go by. Anyway, let's go on with
I was going to say, this article is perfect for this conversation.
Article. Yes.
Go ahead, Chuck.
From Psychology Today. No, I think this one's Craig's.
Okay.
Yes, and what a good article to land on for me, because I am super optimist.
The hell you
at
say.
What age? Huh?
The hell you say,
yes.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, at what age is our sense of optimism at its highest? Youth, they say, is wasted on the young, but what about optimism? New research published in the Journal of Science, Psychology, and Personality Science offers an in-depth look at our sense of optimism evolves as we age. And to study this question, researchers at the University of California, Davis, analyzed data from a large sample of Mexican Americans between ages 26 and 71 at four time points across 7-year period. Participants were asked to complete a life orientation test, a widely used validation measure of optimism. The life orientation test consists of 6 questions listed below. 1, in uncertain times, I usually expect the best. 2, if something can go wrong for me, it will. I think that's the Charlie Brown rule. 3.
That's Murphy's Law.
Yeah, that too. 3, I am always optimistic about my future. 4, I hardly ever expect things to go my way. 5, I rarely count on good things to happen to me. And 6, overall, I expect more good things to happen to me than bad. So participants were asked 54 questions pertaining to various positive and negative life events they may have recently experienced. For example, one of the questions read, over the past 3 months, you've got laid off. Over the past 3 months, you've moved to a worse residence or neighborhood.
Oh, I can say that's a definite.
I mean, guest house.
Speaking from experience there, Brian.
Yeah.
I say in the past year, you were accepted into an educational program that is important to you. And in a past year, you developed new friendships that are important to you.
I would say, Brian, you're at the peak of optimism because you drive a Kia Optima.
Oh!
You just got that.
Oh. And that was a stretch. Anyway, so what it boiled down to is that throughout the questions, it looked like the younger participants had less optimism as they, and it went up to a point around they were in their 50s, and then it kind of leveled off or went back down.
That makes more sense to me. I mean, because really, when you think about it, it's life experience over a period of time.
Yeah.
You know, you've lived life for a while, as opposed to in the younger years, you're looking towards your future and you're not thinking it's going to be as bright. But when you're in it, you're like, hey, this isn't so bad. It's actually not too bad.
You gotta get through the dark high school years.
Well, I mean, even college years too, and then get into that first workforce experience and whatnot, yeah. I think. And I think then once you get that kind of, you know, your middle years, yeah, in middle and later years, and then of course your health begins to decline. So thus it's like, things aren't looking
every
soft.
Time I go to the doctor, they find something I need to take out.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, I can understand people have a pessimistic outlook on things, or even downright down. But I cannot see anything. I have to see something positive. Or
you have to stay on the positive side.
I can't accept anything different. And that's the way I've been forever.
Yeah. It's also, you know, I'm sure your psychological makeup and whatnot, you know,
experience has something to do with that. Yeah. I mean, if you're constantly faced with opposition and it doesn't go in your favor, then I can see how you would become pessimistic after.
But I can see some people who have had really hard lives who still keep a pretty positive outlook on things.
Right. And some people mm-hmm. who have very privileged lives who seem to be very pessimistic about things. I have a hard time hanging around with people with a negative attitude.
Yeah, it's tough.
Absolutely. Yeah. I can't accept anything other than, hey, there's got to be something better around the... Because, I mean, I've had people try to beat me down, and... And there's been points when I recognize I'm like, no, I can't. No, I'm not accepting that. I gotta look forward and look and be positive.
Even in the face of adversity,
what are you living for?
Right. Even in the face of adversity, there's optimism and positivity in those around you.
Yeah.
You know, people offer up support and help, prayers, whatever it is. And you go, wow, that's pretty amazing. You know, I experienced that directly last year with my diagnosis and procedure and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I was just taken aback by how much support and love there is in the world. And I said, wow, this is just, you know, it's one of those things you can't ever seem to repay enough.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
And when given the news, hey, guess what? You've got cancer. Like, all right, what are we going to do about that?
Yeah.
What's the next step?
Yeah.
How do we get out of this?
Yeah. Where do we go?
Because I'm not accepting this. I'm not going out without a fight on that one. And you know, fortunately, everything worked out all right. So,
Todd says, "Yeah."
I got a cat. He's talking outside the door. He wants to be on the podcast.
I was like, "What, Todd? What? Oh, okay, gotcha."
Todd the cat.
So anyway, the message is: stay positive forever.
Yes. Even in the face of especially in the face of adversity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, our question of the week this week is, out of all the Marvel movies leading up to Endgame, what is your favorite scene?
I left out the Endgame part because
I didn't want any spoilers or anything.
A 56-hour marathon to figure that one out.
Yeah. I've got a couple right off the top of my head.
Okay.
Well, I think it also depends on which Marvel movies you really like.
Right.
So...
I'll tell you.
I'll tell you what, Bobby.
What? I like that propane and propane products.
Accessories. Propane and propane accessories.
Yes.
hey, Hank, look, propane.
Growing up, I would say I was not a huge Captain America fan, but his movies really brought out that character.
Well, I think because those movies
came to mind on it.
Changed. From what you saw in the comic books, because comic books, he was very much a upstanding do-gooder Boy Scout. And I think the movies bring that mixture of that of dark mm-hmm. and light. Yeah. Captain America is probably one of my favorite of the Marvel Universe characters. Definitely. Doctor Strange being number one. Stephen Strange is my favorite.
Yeah.
But he's also my favorite
in the movie.
In the movies and comic books, both. Yes.
What about the TV show?
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I mean, it was a product of the 70s. I mean, look at all the Marvel stuff during the 70s. It was like, very 70s-rific.
It's rough to look at now, but yeah. Back in the day.
So that's a good question. That's a good one for all the Marvel fans out there.
And well-timed. I think we can play off of the media hype.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get back to it.
Get a few extra clicks on Twitter or something.
In 4 weeks when we come back.
No, Friday.
Friday, man.
Friday. Oh, yeah, Friday. We'll have some answers on Friday, I guess.
Friday. You can answer him in person. All right, that brings us to the end. Thank you very much. We appreciate your support. We took over an hour of your time, whether you listened to it all in one chunk or you came back in number of pieces. We're good with that also. Thank you for joining us on Facebook Live or YouTube later or downloading the podcast. We greatly, greatly appreciate it. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Craig.
Once again.
Yep, glad to be here.
As long as... it'd be a shame if the contractors never finished your house and be on the podcast
stay
more.
Forever.
They're like Green Acres. They're like, he's always working on the house.
That's exactly what it'd be like. They're like, we actually don't mind it. You know, it's like, you're actually pretty decent, you know, people to stay in our guest house.
Donna doesn't have to change
sheets. I know. She doesn't have to do anything. It's like, we take care of it.
Thank you, Donna, for being our videographer, video engineer this week. She keeps cameras every week.
Yeah,
every wonderful. Week. Well, maybe not next week. She won't be here Friday.
Yep.
Oh,
well, it's
going to be a challenge.
Yeah, well.
All right. And Craig, if you wouldn't mind, give us the traditional binary high five sign off.
101.
Was that the Iron Man palm in the face?
Yeah, I was thinking. I was like, I left my armor in the closet.
Till next time. Bye.